Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Brother Alois, head of the Teze community, comes to Rome to lead young people in a prayer vigil. A Polish Catholic priest and renowned cosmologist is named this year's Templeton Prize winner. And Pope Benedict expresses his grief and condemnation over the killing of the Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, kidnapped in Iraq 2 weeks ago. We begin today with the news of the Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, Paulos Rajo, whose body has been found just outside the Iraqi city where he was seized by gunmen on February the 29th. A driver and two assistants who had just celebrated the Way of the Cross together with the Archbishop were killed in the assault, which was the latest in a string of attacks against Iraq's tiny Christian community. Pope Benedict and other Catholic leaders had repeatedly called for the Archbishop's release, and a telegram from the Pope on Thursday condemns in the strongest possible terms this senseless act of violence, which offends human dignity and seriously undermines the cause of fraternal coexistence amongst all the people of Iraq.
La notizia della morte del Vescovo Rao, rapito nei giorni scorsi, colpisce e addolora profondamente il Santo Padre.
In a statement, Vatican spokesman Father Federico Lombardi reiterated the Pope's grief and condemnation on hearing the news of the Archbishop's tragic death.
Purtroppo la violenza più assurda e ingiustificata continua ad accanirsi sul popolo iracheno e in particolare sulla piccola comunità cristiana.
Father Lombardi said the absurd and unjustified violence that continues to rage through Iraq, targeting in particular the small Christian community, should be a reminder to all, especially the international community, of the need to strengthen the commitment to peace in the devastated nation. Here in St. Peter's Basilica, meanwhile, Pope Benedict led a penitential liturgy for young Italians on Thursday afternoon, followed by a procession to the nearby San Lorenzo Center for Mass and a prayer vigil with adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. The San Lorenzo International Youth Centre is currently marking the 25th anniversary of its foundation by Pope John Paul II. Following Pope Benedict's visit there last Sunday, these events on Thursday mark the start of a 3-day celebration in worship and prayer, culminating in the Diocese of Rome's World Youth Day on Palm Sunday, presided over by Pope Benedict in St. Peter's Square. Among those leading the young people in prayer on Friday are officials from the Pontifical Council for the Laity and special guest speakers, including Brother Alois, head of the ecumenical prayer community Teze, located in the central Burgundy region of France. Founded amid the devastation of the Second World War, the community today counts over 100 brothers from different countries and of different denominations who work for reconciliation as they welcome visitors from all over the world. Hundreds of thousands of young people in particular are drawn to Teze each year by its meditative music and by its simple message of love and acceptance of all cultures and traditions. Earlier in the week, Brother Alois met privately with Pope Benedict for his third such encounter since he took over from Teze's founder, Brother Roger Schutz. I caught up with Brother Alois just after the meeting to find out more. You've been meeting with Pope Benedict.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that encounter?
It was very beautiful and important for us that this tradition continues. Brother Roger came each year to Rome to meet the Pope, and we are very glad that Benedict XVI continues this tradition because it's a necessary support for us. We welcoming all these young people in Teze, it's very necessary to be clear that it is within the Church what we are doing.
It's a part of the tradition, isn't it, in Taizé, to focus particularly on young people, especially those who may not have much contact with their church?
Both. Luckily, there are many young people who are rooted in their church, in their tradition, in faith, in believing in God. Otherwise, it would not be possible. But this makes it possible to welcome also young people who are searching. And it's true, they are more and more numerous today. And even people who grow up in a certain tradition, even in the Catholic Church, sometimes they are not very aware about all the about their faith. What is baptism? What is Eucharist? What is the Word of God? And we feel the need more and more to give a catechism, catechesis in Taizé, to speak about the basic truths of faith.
What kind of words of encouragement did Pope Benedict have for this vital ministry?
Oh, mainly for the prayer. And in the prayer, the chants, the songs of Taizé, he said that it's important to continue on this way, to have a prayer that helps young people to discover within themselves an inner life, an interiority, an inner life, and discovering a personal relationship with God. And for that, silence and these repetitive songs, he said, are very important. So it was really encouraging for me.
Pope John Paul, of course, came to Taizé, didn't
yes,
he? Were you able
yes.
to invite Pope Benedict?
We didn't speak about that because he's so busy. And when John Paul II came, he was younger. He was younger still. We spoke about other things, but it was very personal also, very personal. Among other things, we spoke about our meeting we had in Geneva and about ecumenism. And I told the Holy Father how important it is for us to deepen an ecumenism of prayer, because there we still can do a lot, and we still can perhaps kindle more a fire of enthusiasm, because that is missing sometimes today. Sometimes we get a little bit tired in our ecumenical discussions, but to come together for a common prayer more often, not only once a year when there is the Week of Unity, I think there is still a lot we can do. That's why in Geneva we published a call for reconciliation among Christians, where I also speak about an exchange of gifts that can be deepened much more. Still we remain too distant among Christians of different denomination and not appreciating enough the gifts of the others.
It is true, isn't it, that many people have lost hope, perhaps, in the kind of ecumenical progress that they were expecting, say, just a decade ago?
Yes, because they are very good theological documents, and we expected that these documents would bear much more fruits and really bringing the churches more together.
Why haven't they done so, do you think?
But perhaps this research of communion among Christians in a common prayer has been missing. Yeah? Because it's not enough when that theologians meet, but the Christians have to meet and to grow together and to appreciate each other's gifts more. And there still we have a lot to do. In Taizé, that's what we try to do in Taizé. We have young people coming from different churches. There are many Orthodox Christians coming from Romania, from Serbia, from Russia, and from other countries. Or there are Protestants coming, Lutherans coming from Sweden, many, and Catholic people coming, of course. And we can pray together. That's a quite new experience for many. We can pray together, and not just meeting on a small common basis, yes, but really have a very deep communion in Christ together.
You're also going to lead a prayer vigil here, aren't you? Right,
yes.
Here in Rome for
yes.
young people. Tell us a bit about
yes,
that.
Yes, on Friday we will do that. Like each year before Palm Sunday, we animate such a prayer vigil here in Rome together with the Vicariato of Rome. And this makes that we are present with the young people here at least once a year. And I'm looking forward to that prayer, which will be in San Lorenzo in Piscibus, close to the Vatican here.
Of course, the Diocese of Rome is celebrating World Youth Day on this Palm Sunday, but we're also looking ahead to Sydney, to World Youth Day in Sydney. Will you be attending that?
Yes, I will go with some brothers, and we will have regular prayers in one church there in Sydney. And we are present like we have been present for all the World Youth Days since the beginning.
What is your message to young people now preparing to attend that very special event in Sydney?
Dare to believe. Dare to believe in God, that God is present in your life. God is not absent. And this can change a life.
Tell me also about the meeting that you're preparing in Africa, in Kenya, which has seen so much civil strife. What exactly is Teze going to be doing there?
Oh, since several years, we start again to have youth meetings not only in Europe, but like Brother Roger did many years ago, but we not so much in the last year, so we start this again to have meetings of young people on different continents. We had one in Kolkata 2 years ago, last year in Bolivia. And in these two cities also, the situation of Christians is not easy. It's very different, the two situations. But of course, now in Kenya, we plan a meeting for end of November. And we had planned this already last year. But now this dramatic violence that happened, and that people are shocked now in Kenya that this could happen. So we will see what will be possible. But the aim is to give a sign of solidarity with the people there. And we will see what we can do. Brothers of our community are already now in Nairobi to see together with the church there what we can do.
To prepare for the November meeting.
To prepare for the November meeting, yes. If it could be a sign of reconciliation, would be very important, of course.
It sometimes seems that the churches are unable, although they can bring people together, they're unable to have an impact on these terrible political or social situations.
Yes, especially when so many different things come together, political, social and ethnical divisions. And
economic too.
And economical, yes, of course. So we always have to start again. To believe that the gospel is stronger than these divisions. That's not easy, and probably we have to start again with each generation. It's not once achieved. Now we are Christians and we know, but suddenly there can be divisions and even violences coming up, even among Christians. Even among Christians. So we have to start to evangelize again, each generation again.
This was the great mission, wasn't it, of Brother Roger when he founded the Teze community to reconcile, particularly among Christians. How does the spirit that he left with the community continue to work with you?
Especially he left us this very concrete way of looking for reconciliation that consists simply in going to the other. Going, overcoming a barrier, going. We can go. We should not be afraid and we should not make plans before going, but we should go and then plans will come up. And this is true among the denominations, among the different, among Christians, but also among peoples. And in Nairobi, this will be important to visit and to believe in the strength of visiting, God visited us in a simple way, so disarming. God came, became one of us, and visited us. And Brother Roger always was guided by this way, by the humility of Christ. Christ came in such a humble way to overcome the barriers, to overcome sin, to overcome violence, to overcome hatred. So the only way for us is to go.
You yourself must be frustrated sometimes, aren't you, by the barriers that people put up, that Christians put up between themselves, by the way they won't listen to this very simple message.
Yes and no. Frustrated because, yes, there are so many difficulties, but everywhere we find people who keep the flame burning. And so many people, often in a very hidden way, keep the flame of reconciliation and of faith burning. And when we go towards the others, we meet so many people who do this that we are always encouraged to.
And my thanks there to Brother Alois, head of the ecumenical prayer community Taizé, located in central France. Polish Catholic priest and internationally renowned scientist, Father Michael Heller, has been named as the 2008 Templeton Prize winner. The annual prize is the largest monetary award given to an individual for research that expands the horizons of religion and science. The 72-year-old physicist and cosmologist has dedicated his life to exploring the origins of our universe, often under intense government repression during the communist-controlled era in his native Poland. Despite the many difficulties, he's written over 30 books and since the fall of the Soviet regime has taught and lectured in America, the UK, Italy and Belgium. He's also a member of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and has just written his latest book on the interplay of science and theology together with the former head of the Vatican Observatory, Father George Coyne. My colleague Chris Altieri spoke with Father Heller to find out more about his work and his reactions to the news that he's been chosen as the recipient of this prestigious award.
We want to create in Krakow a kind of institute which would be interested in doing some research in the interface between science and theology, also some research and education as well. We were thinking about such an institute for a long time, and we already started the process of creating such an institution even before I knew about that Nobel Prize. It will be an inter-university institute. It will be created by two Krakow universities, Jagiellonian University, which is the oldest university in Poland, and also the Church University, which is called Pontifical Academy of Theology. And so this money I receive now, I give to that institute. It will be called Copernicus Center. Copernicus is a good patron for such an activity because he was an ecclesiastic and he was also a great scientist. So that's my idea.
You say in your acceptance speech that you're interested in too many things, and that people often ask how you can reconcile your passion for science with your commitment to faith.
To answer such a question, I could lecture all the night, but I can also put it very shortly. I cannot see any conflict, real conflict, between science and religion, because what science really does is the following. Science tries to decipher the mind of God, which he had when created the universe. So from the very definition, I would say science is highly religious enterprise. Well, of course, historically, there were many conflicts, But the origin of these conflicts is mainly historical, so to speak, accidental. But from the very nature, science is deciphering the mind of God, his plan, which he had when creating the universe.
Your interest in religion and in science go back to childhood. And it wasn't an easy time. I mean, you faced the war and the hardship. You were exiled in Ukraine and Siberia. Could you talk with us a little bit about those formative years?
You must take into account the fact that at that time, I was a very little boy. When we were taken to Siberia, I was only 4 years old. So it's very difficult to say that there is some direct influence. But nevertheless, as you said, there were formative years. So some traces of that difficult childhood certainly there are in my mentality, in my personality. First of all, at least when I look back at that history, I must say that always I clearly saw the necessity of some important goal in human life. It's not enough just try to survive one day more. One must have some bigger goal. And this is why I think the religion is indispensable. Roughly speaking, science gives us knowledge, but religion gives us meaning, and there is no decent life without meaning.
I see from your biography that you loved to study, but you were not terribly fond of school. If you had to say something to students, young scientists and school children today, specifically to them, what would you say?
I must say I didn't like my schools like sort of institutions, because I was always an individualist, and in school you must be obeying to the rules. But I always liked studying, and books were always my fascination from the very, very, very early years. And what I would say to my students, I am always joking that the most important part of the body as far as study is concerned is not your head, but it is that part of your body on which you sit. You must sit and study. You know, the systematic work is a key to the success.
After your ordination, both your pursuit of scientific knowledge and your faith and your position as a minister of God's grace through the sacraments in his church brought you to loggerheads with the communist authorities. What do you remember most about those years?
It's a very, very difficult question, because almost everything was something to be remembered.
What stands
out?
I can
answer that at least as in a way I see it now. I think that the most painful thing, most difficult thing at that time was an isolation from the rest of the world. Because especially when doing science, if you are isolated, you are dead. You must have an access to books, to libraries. There was no internet at that time. And we were not allowed to travel freely. We have a shortage of books. So our science was at that time, so to speak, crippled science. This, I think, was something which left a lot of bad traces on our science at that time. Now, of course, it's better, and now it's for me always a great joy when I can pass the border without any control, and this is a real feeling of freedom.
And it was during those very difficult years of the Cold War that you began to frequent the Center for Interdisciplinary Studies, that was an intellectual circle that grew up around a young archbishop of Krakow by the name of Karol Wojtyla. What impact did the man who would become Pope John Paul II have on your life and your work?
I think the influence was very great and very important. This is also involved in some piece of history. You know, in the early 50s of the last century, the theology department was expelled from the Jagiellonian University, Krakow University. And immediately it started its illegal unofficial activities. And in the 60s, I was teaching philosophy at that unofficial theology department, so theology faculty. And Cardinal Wojtyla, when he became, not yet cardinal, but when he became Archbishop of Krakow, he supported the development of this theological faculty, and he divided that faculty into three other faculties: theology, philosophy, and history. And at that time, I was teaching at that faculty, and we collaborated with him in creating this kind of new university with three faculties. So I knew him well, And he was always, from the very beginning, interested in physics. So he read some of my books. And later on, when he became Pope, as you probably know, he had seminars during his summer vacations in Castel Gandolfo with Polish scientists. And I always took part in this. And I think that this connection with the Pope, so to speak, gave us in Poland a certain, I would say, authorization with respect to the Polish bishops and Polish hierarchy, that we are interested in science and not necessarily in theology and pastoral work.
You say that adherents of the intelligent design theory are committing what you call a grave theological error. Can you explain
exactly
this?
You remember the Manichaeistic heresies?
Yes.
And they claimed that there are two big principles, the principle of good, which is God, and the principle of evil. And these two principles fight each other. And this principle of evil was understood as an inner matter or something like that in your Platonic system. And I think that the intelligent design project exactly revives this Manichaeistic error, because they try to oppose God, to create an opposition between God and chance, which is a kind of a Manichaeistic force fighting against God. And they say that we should replace chance in the theory of evolution, which in this theory plays an important role, by the intelligent design. And this is a theological error, because the Manichaeistic doctrine was treated as a heresy. So that there are chance events in the history of the universe, and they play important role not only in the biological evolution, but also in the cosmic evolution. But they are not outside of the God's power. From our point of view, they are justly called chance events. But from the point of view, they are just elements of the overwhelming blueprint of the universe. That's my point of view.
Do you find that religious people are perhaps mistrusting of scientists, or the scientific community is perhaps rather more mistrusting of people of faith?
I think this is really the case, but this case is a special case of something more general. And this more general process, which is going on now in our society, is that there is a certain gap, and this gap is growing bigger and bigger, gap between society and science, or put it differently, there is increase of irrationality. You know, our society is more and more irrational. But science is a kind of incarnation of rationality, and therefore there is this certain gap between science and the rest of society. And this is extremely dangerous, because this could be something fatal for our culture. And unfortunately, also this process affects the Catholic Church and other churches as well. This influx of irrationality, all this postmodernism and New Ages and things like that, they act just in opposite direction than science does.
And my thanks there to Father Michael Heller, recipient of the 2008 Templeton Prize, talking to my colleague Chris Altieri. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at the same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.